Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 5th of November, recording at 9:04 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first a quick look at the highlights here today. And the Asian stock markets were mostly slightly lower, given Wall Street's retracement of most of its gains yesterday on the weakness of the banking sector. Now, that weighed on the European markets at the opening, but Wall Street came in and started to do very well on lower employment claims, unemployment claims, I should say, lower unemployment, and a jump in productivity, which encouraged a belief that corporations might start hiring again. Anyway, that was enough to push Wall Street up 2% or more on average for the main indices. And that puts the Dow back above 10,000. And I believe it's also the Dow's best gain since July. So that's interesting. More on that in a moment. In the long-dated government bonds, we see the treasuries actually steady. Futures are up a little bit, whereas they were down in Europe. And the U.S. dollar, a very quiet day. It's slightly down against the euro and the Australian dollar. Looks like it's just a wee bit easier, although the U.S. dollar index is showing a modest gain. Not sure where that's coming from. In the commodity markets, it's been a quiet day for precious metals. Silver is about unchanged, is unchanged here as I speak. Platinum down a wee bit, palladium up a wee bit, gold and just about. That's trading here at 10.91. That's down a dollar. And we did have weaker grain and bean prices on better weather. And the industrial metals mostly slightly easier. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as global stock markets are concerned, you know, it's been very much a case of a reactive and consolidation phase. And as Owen pointed out in an earlier report, I think it was yesterday, there are three different types of mean reversion, and that's what we've been looking for, reversion to the mean, towards the mean, and the mean defined by the rising 200-day moving averages that are best seen on the weekly charts. Okay, so of those three ways, we can get that reactive or corrective process out of the way is that one, you can get the spike where the market has spiked upwards and it spikes down. You do see that on a number of individual shares that had run ahead too quickly and a few indices. The other type is that you get the loss of momentum, the rollover or sort of small rounding top type of formation prior to a setback. And then the other occurs with some of the strongest markets, or definitely occurs with the strongest markets, where you just see a sideways ranging pattern where the market remains in a tight range for a couple of months, maybe more, depending on how long this carries on. Now, given that the Dow's seen its best day since July, according to Bloomberg, we need to ask the question, could the actual reaction lows have been seen? Well, it's not impossible for one reason, and this is a bull market overall. We are only looking for a reaction and consolidation with some corrections. That's just a bigger reaction and taking somewhat longer time. Wall Street has not broken its progression of higher reaction lows on the Dow, the S&P, or the NASDAQ. I haven't checked it for the other indices, but they'll probably be fairly similar. So that's not a bad performance overall. And, well, basically you could say these indices would have to take out their very recent reaction lows that were seen either late last week or earlier this week to indicate that we were going to extend this overall corrective phase to the downside rather than ranging sideways. So I'd be a little cautious here in terms of jumping up and saying, yeah, that's definitely it. We've seen the lows for the corrective process. I think that would be premature, but we do have a moderate upward dynamic in here today on Wall Street. And also, if we look at the market that I think is really a template for what's going to happen elsewhere, and I mentioned this on a number of occasions, and that's China. China moved into the corrective phase first. And it actually, on this, I'm talking about these A-share markets now, and we actually saw pullbacks for the various A-share markets of the better part of 25%. So that was really quite sharp, prompted a number of people to say, oh, that's a bear market, and to write all sorts of endgame stories for China, which we regarded as absurd. And now China has showed a series of higher reaction lows following its low. I think the low was actually in August. And we've also got a higher high within the pattern, although it hasn't gone through its July high yet. But it looks firm. It just looks like a support building process overall for China. And China is one of the big influential stock markets. And I think because China is the strongest economy in terms of GDP, has been for some time, that makes it very exciting when we're talking about a billion, 200 million or 300 million people. And therefore, the China leash effect is powerful in Asia. It's not as powerful as Wall Street's leash effect, but it's on the way to becoming more powerful relative to the Wall Street leash effect, and it's certainly one to take note of. And I think that China's influence is also beginning to extend beyond the Asian region. And then I mentioned that Wall Street's main indices did not break their sequence of higher reaction lows, at least not yet. And so that is really an impressive relative performance here among the markets that have seen reactions and consolidations. Wall Street hasn't come back all that much. And I mentioned the tailwind that it has received from the soft U.S. dollar, which makes the U.S. market cheaper for overseas buyers, tends to lock in domestic investors a little more as well. And people know that the multinational companies in the U.S. will do better on the basis of consolidated earnings, which are consolidated in U.S. dollars. And those are the sectors that we do like in the U.S. We don't like the financials. Obviously, the financials were going to get the biggest gain off the lows, and it's important that financials not fall out of bed again. But who needs the risks that go with that sector? Whereas the areas that interest us at Fuller Money are very much the big U.S. multinationals. Often they are dominant players in their respective industries, and they benefit from the stronger growth in Asia and other parts of the world. And again, many of these companies are technology, but they're also things like Johnson & Johnson and GE. And so these are the companies that I would, geez, a more speculative one because of its financial unit. But you know the theme that we're talking about. As far as the U.S. is concerned, we like the big multinational companies. Most of and a high proportion of those will be tech companies, information technology companies, and those are the sectors that I think will logically be of greatest interest and do best in the bull market going forward. Now, again, we still very much like the Fuller Money themes. We like China at this time because China has seen its mean reversion correction already, and it is not confirmed that we have seen the reaction lows here for most of the other stock markets around the world. But expect further ranging. That would be certainly a quite reasonable prospect. And the closer some of these indices move towards their rising 200-day moving averages, the better that will actually be technically overall. And we maintain that this is not a corrective process where I would be thinking about selling very much, unless one was a very highly leveraged investor. Our view on this has been pretty consistent all along. If you want to sell in a bull market environment, do it on the new highs. Don't do it when you've seen a 5 or 10% or more reaction, which is when people tend to become frightened and jump out on the market. Our view is that those reactions are the buying opportunities at this stage of the cycle, because there's no big factor out there to undermine the bull market at this stage. The comment that we hear over and over again is that markets have run too far ahead of themselves. Well, sure, we've said they've become overextended relative to their mean represented by the 200-day moving averages. So thus some corrective phases providing additional buying opportunities. But that's hardly a problem. That's normal for a bull market advance. And other people say, well, the earnings just aren't going to be good enough to justify these levels. A lot of economists have been saying this sort of thing. And well, they may be right on that, but the monetary policy is so accommodative, and companies have been carrying out a very considerable efforts to increase their own productivity. The nasty side of that for the economy is the laying off of workers. And the positive side of that is that they just find additional efficiencies, and not least in terms of improving their technology, upgrading their technology. But overall, when monetary conditions are favorable and growth is a bit weak, as long as there is some growth emerging and investors can see that, stock markets tend to do quite well in periods where growth is soft but monetary conditions remain accommodative. When stock markets struggle is when we've had booming conditions and monetary conditions are being steadily tightened by the central banks. Now, we're a long way from that, and while we have seen a few rate hikes around the globe, and Australia had its second rate hike, I think, earlier this week, but rates are only up to 3.5% on the short term, and that's still well below the historic average that for Australia, as Owen pointed out earlier in the week. So we don't have many headwinds here, other than perhaps occasional bouts of investor apathy or vertigo or whatever we want to call it. Net it all out, bottom line, this is a bull market in a corrective phase. The downward moves within that corrective phase are buying opportunities. And if you want to take some profits, do it on the new highs, not on the reactive phases. Can one justify sitting tight with positions that you like? Well, I'm very happy to sit tight with my positions overall, and I could justify adding to some of them. I'll probably do some of that fairly soon. I mentioned ISA top-ups and some dividend accumulation that's occurred in my long-term pensions and ISA accounts. Okay. What else to mention here? Precious metals. Well, it's been a banner week so far here for gold on that exciting news in terms of India buying, what was it, over 200 tons of gold, or about approximately half of the IMF's allocation that was for sale. Over the very long term, gold has had a history of moving from weak hands into stronger hands. We've seen the central banks in weaker countries selling gold. We see the central banks in the stronger emerging countries accumulating gold. We see investors certainly accumulating gold. And as someone said on a television program I was watching while in my home gym this morning, that if you want to understand the gold argument, and amazingly, there are people who are still claiming to be dumbfounded by the gold move, or feeling that it's irrational. Well, as this one email that was reported, that governments are just printing pretty pictures on fancy paper in unlimited qualities and calling it money. And no wonder that some of these assets, not least gold, which has had a reputation as hard money for thousands and thousands of years, and that's one of the reasons why in more recent centuries that so many fiat currencies were backed by gold. Basically, in a fiat currency world, we live in an entirely fiat currency world. A fiat currency is a faith-based currency. In God we trust, or whatever they want to write on it. Whereas gold, again, is hard money, albeit with a fluctuating value. The time when gold will not look so attractive is when short-term interest rates are higher, because then people will do the calculations and they'll say, well, wait a minute, if interest rates are at 5% or whatever, name a figure, but where there's a reasonable yield, if they say, if I can get 5%, is gold going to appreciate more than that prevailing rate of interest over the next year? If they think not, and if a few people are selling gold so that gold can start to underperform, and if interest rates are quite high, gold would definitely underperform. If we got back to the rates that we had seen in the mid-1980s, gold would significantly underperform. But we're not there yet. Instead, what we have is the most accommodative monetary policy environment in the history of the world still. And even though the slow incremental process of a change towards less accommodative monetary policy has commenced, that's a slow moving boat, and everything else is still, well, everything period is still in gold's favor, except that it has reached levels where poorer people from India to the United States are not able to buy at these levels, and are very tempted to cash in their jewelry for scrap. but overall, Let's take the technical action. It has showed that gold has been under accumulation for a very long time and remains so. Owen has pointed out the consistency of gold's move in recent months. If it remains as consistent as we've seen over the last few months, we can expect a move up over $1,100 and perhaps up around the $1,125 level, and then perhaps a pause and another step. If it was going to repeat the consistency that we've seen within the last couple of months or more, what I would expect eventually is that gold will move upwards at a steepening rate. Okay, what else to mention? Soybeans, I'm a stale bull there. The position had almost gotten back up to a break-even level at one point yesterday and has been hit by news of some increased rain in the South American growing regions. I think that's mainly Brazil, which they feel will improve the crop outlook, and weather conditions have become a little bit more favorable in other regions as well. So that's pulled back. It's still very much range bound. I think we're getting extended base formation development in the grain and bean complex, but it may require more patience before we see upward moves. I definitely expect precious metals and also industrial metals to continue to outperform over the short term. And it's just a matter of time before I think crude oil eventually follows that lead. Personally, I'd be very happy to see crude oil just consolidate around this $75 to $80 region. I think that would be good for the global economy and good for most other investments. But sooner or later, I do expect another significant price increase in crude oil. And I think that's covered the main bases that I wanted to touch on here in today's audio. I'm away tomorrow, so I won't be contributing to the comment of the day or the audio on Friday, but I will certainly be here next week for all of next week. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.